Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit littleguysfranchise.com. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Monday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on? How are we doing?
Buenos dias, Senor Rex Road and Senor Robbie.
I love the exchange of Rex Road, apparently. What game were you watching that was in all Spanish the other day?
Yes.
Tennessee, South Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yesterday here in, my grandma's house in Venice, Florida, we've had a little mini family reunion. I did what you said, Corey. I hit like the thing. Oh, okay. So we got like it on Spanish or whatever. You hit the language thing. No, all the other channels, you know, were in English, but the ABC feed of Tennessee, South Carolina was all in Spanish. We watched the whole game with the Spanish broadcast. It was interesting. Also, it was like delayed. Yeah. Well, it was also delayed like 3 seconds. So like they'd react to stuff late and like the whistles, it was a tough watch.
With every basket, did they go?
No, not quite that. Yeah, that would be a lot for hoops. But it was, I thought they were good. I need to find out the announcers' names. They were good.
That was good stuff. I enjoyed that exchange between you and Corey Curtis on Twitter yesterday. So, Corey, we were talking earlier about the Titans and the window to win and all these different things. Mm-hmm. My question for you is, outside of keeping their own guys, like maybe a Harold Landry and figuring out the offensive line and what to do with Lawan or Saffold, what in your mind is the number one priority in terms of maybe additions for the Titans this offseason? What position are you looking at the most?
Well, you know, there's not a ton of holes there. But, you know, I think when I look at, you know, the shaping of this team kind of going forward and, like, you know, what you could ideally do is – and I don't think it's a mystery. You need an athletic tight end who can challenge defenses and can create some plays for you. So I think that is, you know, and they can do that in the draft or they could do it in free agency. I think that there are economical guys that can help them in free agency. And I think there's expensive guys that can help them in free agency. Or they could just try to do it in the draft and hope it works out. That's a choice. That is one thing that they need to do. I also think they need to get younger and a little less expensive on the offensive line. Obviously they've used some draft capital in that area, and it hasn't always worked out. It needs to start working out because, you know, you can't spend everywhere. And so, you know, that's another area that I would like to see get worked out. And that's not to say that I want to see guys go, but father time comes for us all, and there is a cap, and you can handle, you know, kind of both of those things at the same time. I also think that, I think they need more of a true slot who can come out there. It doesn't have to be, you know, a two or a three down guy, but a guy who can come out there and create bad matchups for them out of the slot. And so those are just a couple there. I think tight end is the most overwhelming one for me.
That's a lot of stuff, of course. And I mean, I agree with all that, Corey. But obviously it's, you know, the tough choices are going to be a part of that. Because we've talked about this in the last few weeks, and we're going to keep talking about it until the Titans actually make these tough choices. But
yeah,
any change of opinion? I really struggle. Like, I go back and forth on Zach Cunningham. That's the one where I'm like, you know, I feel like obviously if there could be a restructuring of his deal, because they can cut him for nothing. But I also, like, it's like, man, I just can't make the math work with him. But maybe that's a bad idea to let him go.
Well, from what John said, John Robinson, it sounds like when they picked him up, it was a long term decision that they plan on him being a part of their football team moving forward. But to do that, they have to restructure his contract. There's no way around it. You can't do $10 million a year for a run stopper, which is primarily what he is. But, you know, I think they value him. And, you know, restructuring doesn't mean taking money away from a guy. It means, you know, usually giving it more to him up front and then spreading it out. And so that's what I think that they'll end up doing. I think they'll restructure Zach. You know, other candidates for restructure are Luan and Derrick Henry. I think those guys are also candidates, you know, for restructure for the Titans. You know, obviously I know some people have talked about Luan as a possible cut, and that's true because his dead money's only $1 million. But, you know, left tackles are tough to replace. You know, they just don't grow on trees. And not, you know, that Roger Saffold's do, but it's easier to replace guards generally than it is tackles. And so that's what I would expect them to do. But we'll see. As I said, you know, Saffold's 34, and I think Ben Jones, whose contract is up, I think is about to be 33. You know, so these guys are getting older.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Corey, I think most Titans fans feel good about Christian Fulton. They feel good about what Elijah Molden gave him in his rookie year. How concerned are you about that other corner spot? Obviously, I think the plan would be for Caleb Farley to step in there, but how concerned are you about that spot, given, number one, his injury history, his lack of experience, and maybe the depth there with, I would assume, Jackrabbit Jenkins probably being cut this offseason?
Yeah, I think that's a good assumption. I mean, you know, I know they like what they got for Buster Screen. Could you bring him back at an affordable rate and draft another guy at some point to come in? Because you've got to have some kind of backup, right? I mean, with Caleb Farley's injury history, you can't presume he's going to play 16 for you. I mean, we were tossing around in the office last night. If you set an over under for Caleb Farley games for next season, we put the number at 6. What would you take? What would you bet on?
Ooh, that's tough. It'd be tough for me. I'd say over 6, but I don't feel good about it.
Jose?
Yeah, I'd probably guess over. Really? But yeah, I mean, 6 is a low number. I mean, first
he's
of all,
one year of football, guys. 1 year.
Yeah, I know. That's why I don't feel good about it. I know.
Yeah, I mean,
two
it's
knees and two backs.
Yeah.
In 1 year.
Yeah.
And look, well, I wish the kid nothing but the best, and I hope he's a freaking Hall of Famer from here on out. But, you know, history says his body does not like playing football.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. If you're, and I'm not saying you're wrong at all, but I mean, if your view of that situation matches up with theirs, you know,
you've got to have a backup plan. I guess that's my main point.
Well, I mean, you could also make the case. I think everyone has cut Jackrabbit Jenkins now. Everyone in Nashville has cut him. He's cut. I mean, you could like actually not cut him, right?
You're right.
But I mean,
you could.
You know, that is.
But then
it is
you're gonna
feasible
have to
keep players under contract.
$7 million. I mean, guys, they are over right now, and that's just the fact. And so, not everybody can stay. I mean, that's why, you know, we hate these conversations because I don't want anybody to get cut, whether they get their money or not. I mean, getting cut stinks. I mean, nobody. I mean, even like, you know, if Joe and Robbie got cut today, and even though they knew they had another job waiting for them at Station B, it still stinks to hear go away. I mean, that's no fun. Nobody needs to hear that.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us. So, Corey, let's switch gears, get into the Predators. They've been, I think, one of the surprises of the NHL all season long. They've now lost 4 in a row coming out of the All-Star break, albeit, you know, the last couple to really good teams in the East. What's your concern level at this point if you're a Predators fan with the way things have gone for them over the last week and a half?
Well, I mean, I'm not like panicked, but I'm concerned because the points are starting to get away from them, and they've got to get the penalties under control. Because, you know, UC, who's largely played very well this year, hasn't been electric enough to erase that many power plays. I mean, you just can't play shorthanded that much. I mean, they're number one in the league, and it's not even close, right? I mean, so they've got to work that out. I mean, whether that's being a little less aggressive, whether, the, you know, I asked Roman Yossi, is it, you know, just being lazy with your stick and, you know, figuring something out, because there's a lot of hooks and a lot of holds in there. You know, this isn't all boarding and roughing and, you know, just overly aggressive penalties. There's a lot of hooks and holds in there. And, you know, that's, to me, that's, you know, and look, I didn't play hockey my whole life. I played some. I didn't play hockey my whole life. But, you know, to me, that's lazy. That's trying to get an advantage, you know, instead of moving your feet and getting your body position. And so I think that they can clean some of that up. And I think the refs are looking for them right now, and they're getting it. So they've got to be cleaner than everyone else at this point.
Okay, I'm going to switch gears again to show off your versatility to the topic that'll probably be, I'd say it'll probably take up at least half, if not more than that, of the debate shows today. Your fellow Chicagoan, Juwan Howard, I assume you've seen the video.
Yeah,
Wisconsin-Michigan postgame, you know, slap to the face of Joe Krabanoff. What do you think of that situation? What do you think should be the outcome of that situation?
Well, whenever you're in a leadership position like that, that's not okay. You've got to rise above the situation. No matter what's said, what's done, you know, you're a leader of young men. You represent your university. You've got to be bigger, okay? You've got to rise above whatever situation you may have perceived. And unless you think someone's an imminent threat to your health or your family's health and safety, you cannot take a swing at them. You know, this isn't playing on the playground, you know, where everybody's calling a foul every time they miss a shot and you get aggravated. I mean, this is college basketball. This is national television. You don't get to do that. Now, am I for firing Juwan Howard and saying you can never coach again? No. I would suspend him. I said for 1 to 4 games was kind of my thought. And would 4 games pretty much finish out their season? Because they're like 14-11, I think, something like that.
Something, maybe 4 or 5, probably, right?
Yeah. So I think that would be the extreme, would be to shut him down for the rest of the season. But, I mean, I would definitely suspend him for a game or two.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road, joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Corey? Appreciate you, my friend. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
Buenos dias.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you later. Corey Curtis does a great job for News 2, joins us every Monday morning here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Corey had to say there. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Speaking of the Nashville Predators, you just heard Corey's thoughts on the Preds. The all-new Paint the Town Preds pack, presented by Yeehaw Brewing and Old Smoky, something you're going to want to pay attention to. You can purchase the pack and receive 2 weekend game tickets, plus 1 weeknight game ticket of your choice. Plus, you can receive a Preds car flag, a $25 Yeehaw Brewing Company gift card, and the opportunity to purchase 2022-23 season tickets as well. Visit NashvillePredators.com/paint to secure yours today. Get your Paint the Town Preds pack today and score your own hat trick, Smashville. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Thanks to Corey Curtis from News 2 for joining us in the last segment. Had a lot to get to there. We'll get to a couple of your thoughts on our text line here in just a few minutes. Right now, let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Chad from Franklin, who wants to weigh in. Chad, thanks for calling in Robbie and Rex Road.
Yeah, guys, I appreciate taking the call. So I wanted to kind of give y'all my insight on the tight end situation and the Titans, and from a Dallas Cowboys point of view. I'm a huge Dallas Cowboys fan, and I believe the Titans have a tight end on their team currently who could be the guy you need if he was just given the chance. So Jeff Swaim was a huge playmaker for Texas coming out of college. And when he got drafted by the Cowboys, the big thing they were worried about was his blocking ability. Because, you know, with the Cowboys, they want their tight ends to be able to do it all. So that year that he comes in, he's sitting behind Jason Witten. And all through camp, all they're talking about is he's following around Jason Witten like a puppy. He's following around Jason Witten like a puppy. He's learning how to block. Well, he comes in, he does great, he's kind of Dak security blanket there for a game or two, and then he goes down with a season-ending injury. Well, everybody's thinking, all right, this is Jason Witten's replacement. We got our guy. And he gets traded to Jacksonville, where Jacksonville only uses him as a blocking tight end because he learned how to do it properly from one of the best tight ends ever to do it. And then when he comes to the Titans, I hear Jared and other people on y'all's radio station just refer to him as a blocking tight end. He's just a blocking tight end. Now, I don't know if maybe his confidence went away after the injury or if people around the league have just pigeonholed him into a blocking tight end role, but I personally think that Jeff Swaim, if given the chance, could be your tight end guy. Then just go do what the Cowboys did last year. Get all defense and make Ryan Tannehill a defense like Joe Flacco and Trent Dilfer had and call it a day. That's my thoughts.
Thanks for the call, Chad. We appreciate it. What do you think of that, Joe? Jeff Swaim, maybe the answer at tight end moving forward. I will say, now, first off, Jeff Swaim also a free agent. So are the Titans going to bring him back? I think that's a fair question to ask as well. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy that in his career has played in 69 games, 88 catches, 694, and 5 touchdowns. Like, the numbers just aren't really there from Jeff Swaim. Now, look, I will say, I thought Jeff Swaim had some good moments for the Titans next year. But to me, if I'm John Robinson, I don't mind necessarily bringing Jeff Swaim back if the price is right. But in order to change the offense where I think Tannehill needs, I'm shooting much higher than Jeff Swaim if I'm John Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know sometimes tight end production can be tied to just not getting the opportunities, but
we've talked about that with Jonnu Smith.
That's right. That's right. And there's there's a difference there, right? I mean,
yeah,
you know, you can see with Jonnu Smith or Delanie Walker, that's what you're looking for. Or obviously you can go to, you know, like the star tight ends in this league, the Kittles and Kelseys. I mean, look, you can't realistically expect to have one of those on your team next year. I do think Jeff Swaim had a good year. And of those three free agents, all of them are free agents, I'd probably prioritize him first. Although I also thought Michael Pruitt did a good job in his role and had some good moments catching the ball. But yeah, you've got to be more dynamic than Swaim or Pruitt at that position, to me. At least if a free agent and or draft pick you can develop. I think Swaim can be part of the answer here moving forward, but they've got to get someone who is a bit more of a matchup problem for opposing defenses.
Well, and you said earlier you wouldn't be surprised if they go get one of these guys at tight end that are free agents out there. I mean, we've talked about the names. I mean, there's, you know, O.J. Howard. There's Tonyan that's a free agent. You know, Uzama is a free agent, which I imagine he'll be back with Cincy. But, you know, Zach Ertz is out there. Jared Cook's out there. Hayden Hurst is out there. Evan Ingram's out there. I mean, you can go up and down the list of tight ends that Gesicki are out there. Yeah, Gesicki's out there. I mean, there's all sorts of tight ends that are out there that I would assume at least a few of those guys will make it to free agency. You think the Titans are going to be players for those guys?
I just think if there's any sort of free agent move, it would be there. Now, again, you could also – we could see a move for, as you we talked about earlier in the show, maybe a corner, and that probably has something to do with how they look at the Caleb Farley situation. How do they feel about him? Not just getting healthy, which is already a big question, but then being a good, like a starting quality corner, or offensive lineman, you know, trying to, last year they went out, got Kendall Lamb, didn't really work out the way they hoped. I could see him trying something like that. But I think if there's a free agent signing of any sort of significant number, I would absolutely put my money on it being at tight end, especially because of the crop. You know, I'm sure among those guys we've listed, there's at least a couple of them that the Titans are really focusing on and thinking, you know, this guy could really fit well here. OJ Howard is the tantalizing, you know, talent who was really good in college and he's got all the measurables, but he hasn't played like it yet. He's, you know, Ebron is a really interesting one too. Hugely, a typically like overreaching Lions draft pick, who was disappointing for the most part there, but has had some good moments since leaving that franchise. You know, how much more does he have? Yeah, it seems to be a bit of a theme in the NFL, right? But he's also, I don't know that he's exactly what they're looking for in this offense, but he would be certainly more of a receiving threat than they had last season.
Chris on the text line says, if you want to dig up old tweets, Look at Corey Curtis's tweets from the amount of times that Swaim just flat whiffed on blocks. Crazy, he is a blocking tight end after some of those misses. It's coming from Chris on the text line.
Well, Corey Curtis wasn't alone. There's one in Seattle in particular where
it was rough.
It was a really costly whiff. That said, you know, that's the thing. You know, it's like officials, offensive linemen, long snappers. You make the one or two huge mistakes, that's what we all think about. I think that Swaim, through the course of the year, was a pretty good blocking tight end.
Do we have so of those three, Swaim, Firkser, and Michael Pruitt? And obviously the Pruitt thing is interesting because, I mean, he suffered that just awful injury against the Dolphins, and I don't know what his timeline looks like and all that other stuff. So there's that part of it to factor in as well. I wonder how many of those three the Titans are interested in bringing back. Like, you know, obviously I think you want to upgrade at tight end. You need to have some good depth as well. I wouldn't be surprised if Jeff Swaim's back next year. I wonder of those three guys, how many John Robinson's interested in bringing back and how many he just says, thanks for your time. Well, we'll see you down the road.
Yeah. To me, again, I would put Swaim first on the list of what I would prioritize. And I would not be surprised if they bring him back. Pruitt, I mean, they did everything they could to not sign him last year. And now, as you said, he's coming off that injury. So I don't know. I wouldn't expect him to be here. Firkser is really interesting.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's been a great find for this organization. There's no doubt about it. But last year was a big opportunity, and he didn't really take advantage of it. So, but like, is he appealing to other teams out there? I mean, you can see, you know, where he can be a pretty good pass catching tight end, but is there a market for him out there? I don't know. I mean, if you can bring Firkser back at very low cost, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world.
No.
You know, and then you've got a couple tight ends who, you know, they know the system, you can count on them, and then you try to sign somebody, maybe draft somebody, and you got a tight end room.
Yeah, like I have no problem bringing Anthony Firkser back. I hope the days of acting like Anthony Firkser is about to turn into, you know, George Kittle out there are over. Because we got a little crazy with that last training camp.
We did. But that's what training camp's for, isn't it?
That is true. Jim on the text line says, were we in the mix to pick up Zach Ertz when he left the Eagles? If so, what happened? He looked really good with Arizona. By the way, Zach Ertz will be a free agent this offseason.
Well, remember last offseason, you know, obviously John Robinson went the way of chips, pushing those chips and go get Julio Jones. I mean, there was a lot of talk about them as players for Ertz in a possible trade at that point. Yep. Obviously it didn't happen. I don't know how close they were, but I mean, it wouldn't have worked out this year given their cap situation. So, I mean, Ertz to me is probably a little bit pricey given what their situation is. But, hey, if you can make that work, do it by all means.
Yeah, absolutely. Some real quick news on the University of Tennessee front. This coming from Pete Thamel from ESPN. University of Tennessee wide receiver coach Cody Burns has accepted the New Orleans Saints wide receivers job. Burns, also a former Auburn player who has coached at MTSU, Arizona State, and Auburn as well. So Josh Heupel losing a member of his staff to the New Orleans Saints, now the wide receiver coach in the NFL.
Interesting timing on that. You don't see too much, you know, coaching movement in late February, but
you don't.
That's a hole to fill for Tennessee. Pretty important position. Maybe one of the, you know, should be one of their better positions this year.
We'll come back. We'll take more of your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. A landing spot for Brian Flores. Also, some interesting comments from a former head coach of Tom Brady as well. We'll get to that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds fans, join us for Smashville Live this Wednesday on 102.5 The Game. The show will air on Wednesdays during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m. featuring Preds players, former players, and other special guests. You can watch the show via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and Twitter as well. Join us this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Little Guys Movers. Here's your chance to be your own boss. Join their team of 30-plus years of profits and good times. Visit LittleGuysFranchise.com. We'll be joined by Darren McFarland to begin the 9 o'clock hour. Looking forward to that conversation coming up in about 30 minutes. Right now, taking thoughts on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Chris texting in says, speaking of things from last year's training camp, remember when Tannehill was throwing multiple picks at camp? It was kind of written off as lack of time with receivers and defense doing a little bit better. Maybe it was an omen we should have paid more attention to. This coming from Chris on the text line, talking about Tannehill's training camp interceptions.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's fair to bring it up. I think a lot of what was, I mean, a lot of what I believed at the time was he's, you know, taking some risks, letting it rip. You know, why not give these DBs some good looks? You know, it's not like there's a real consequence to throwing a pick in a team period. But, hey, the fact is he threw more picks during camp than he had in the prior two camps, and he threw more picks in the season. So making that correlation is fair.
Well, and it wasn't totally written off as no big deal, because like eventually Vrabel was asked about it during camp last year. And I remember him saying, yeah, he's got to stop doing that. Like, he's got to stop turning the ball over. So it was at least on Vrabel's radar as well when we were talking about that last year.
Yeah. And coaches, you know, there's a certain level of, especially if you're an established player, of, hey, you know, try some things out. You know, it's okay that, like, you know, this is a time to do some of that. But also, coaches, for the most part, believe, like, how you practice is how you play. So, yeah, no, you're right. A couple times, I think, during camp, there was at least a little bit of, like, stop throwing it to the other team.
Yeah.
Energy from Vrabel. So, again, it's like, okay, so if that's the case, if camp should have told us that this was coming, I still ask, you know, why?
You know? Yeah.
Well, why did Ryan Tannehill become turnover prone quarterback after two seasons of not at all being that?
Yeah, it's a great question. Matt from DC on the text line says, go get Evan Engram, athletic tight end who can also line up in the slot. The Titans are 2 for 2 in getting guys from the NFC East, DeMarco and Arakpo as well. So what do you think about that? Evan Engram, keeping some of that NFC East magic going.
He's he's very talented.
He is.
He's also been injured. I don't know the whole history, but I feel like he's been banged up quite a bit.
Yeah.
But no, there's a lot of possibilities in there. And again, a lot of those names won't get to the point where you can sign them, I think. But he's one of them for sure who could be really intriguing.
Go back to the text line. Nate texting in says, I thought it was interesting that Brian Flores took an assistant coaching position with the Steelers. How do you think this will impact the lawsuit, if at all? I understand it's not a head coach position, and that's the goal of the lawsuit. But with him now being focused on football again, how does the suit move forward? This coming from Nate. And if you missed it, Brian Flores has accepted a position with the Pittsburgh Steelers. So was involved in multiple interviews for head coaching positions. Obviously, those positions have been filled at this point, and now Brian Flores accepting a job with the Pittsburgh Steelers on their defensive staff. What do you think of that landing spot for Brian Flores?
Well, I mean, it shows, you know, he's got the lawsuit. He also wants to continue on with his coaching career. And, you know, the legal expert reaction to that was, this weakens the lawsuit. So, I mean, which I get it. I get why you would look at it that way. You know, because obviously if you're out of the league, then you know, if Brian Flores couldn't get a job here, then you could also add to the lawsuit, or, you know, the conversation is, and now, by the way, he's blacklisted by the whole league, even whether that's true or not. I mean, that's, you know, that's part of the discussion, and now he got a job. So, I mean, I still think like the lawsuit kind of stands on its own. But, you know, maybe it makes it tougher. I mean, I think the lawsuit, I still think ultimately this lawsuit is going to shine a light on some things. And there's an issue here that a lot of people are trying to figure out. I think in good faith, a lot of people are trying to figure out how to fix it. And that's probably the biggest impact it has. But, you know, for Flores, you know, look, I mean, that guy to me should be a head coach again soon in this league.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wasn't really surprised to see him end up with the Steelers. I mean, first off, I think that's a good fit for him. I think that's a good fit for them. And I think he's going to make their defense a lot better as they move forward here. They just got to find a quarterback, and then we'll see what the Steelers can do on that front. But Brian Flores, now a defensive assistant linebacker coach with the Steelers as well. Some interesting comments over the weekend from Bruce Arians, as there was a report came out that, you know, Brady and Arians may have gotten into it at the end of his time in Tampa Bay. And apparently, you know, Brady and Leftwich would be sitting down game planning all week long. And then, you know, Arians would come in there with like the red letter pen and just start going through everything and scratching it out. And there was a report that that drove Brady nuts. And that was part of the reason that he decided to retire, was his relationship with Bruce Arians had soured. Now, Arians has since come out and said that all that is nonsense. He used words that I can't use on the radio station here, but nonsense was essentially what he was driving at. And they were also asked Bruce Arians if he thought Tom Brady would come back to play in 2022. And Arians said he would be, quote, shocked if that happened, if Brady came back to play in 2022. What do you think of all that? The noise between maybe Brady and Arians, that not ending well. And what do you think of him saying he would be shocked if Brady comes back to play? Do you believe Bruce Arians when he says this?
Believe him when he says it, that nothing happened?
When he says that he would be shocked if he comes back to play.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still way less than 50% in believing that Brady's actually going to come right back and unretire. I don't know about shocked, because Brady has certainly put out some hints that maybe he would, but you know, this whole, so I'm trying to, the original report on this whole thing was what was who again?
I can't remember exactly who it was. I'm trying to find that right now.
Yeah, I am too. I know that he said it was the Tampa Bay Times that he said that he was mad. So it was okay. It's Rich Orenberger, radio show host. Okay. So Rich Orenberger, who, you know, is also a former NFL player, has that information right now, I don't know. But it's tantalizing.
It is. That would be like two coaches in a row that end on bad terms. If Brady's out there fighting with Belichick towards the end, and now he's out there fighting with Bruce Arians toward the end, maybe the Pharaoh, he's just hard to work with. Like, it could be a guy that maybe he's just difficult. Tom Brady's way too difficult for normal people to handle. Soured with Belichick, and it's soured with Arians.
I mean, let's be fair with Brady. Yeah. He's the GOAT. Everybody loves him, but I could see him being a little bit of a handful.
I could see that. But don't, like, at some point, like, I understand if you're an NFL head coach, there's a certain level of ego, I think, that goes with that, because you put in all this work, you've worked your entire life to get in this spot. But, like, at some point, don't you also have to look around and be like, yeah, I think we'll just let Tom Brady kind of do his thing. We'll just see whatever he wants to do. We'll do it. I probably would. Maybe that's why I'm not an NFL head coach.
No, I mean, within reason, but yeah, pretty much. I mean, look, he basically was their GM, wasn't he?
He was. Yes.
I mean, he was at least assistant to the general manager, if not assistant general manager. So, but I don't know. I can also see Bruce Arians being a pain in the butt too,
frankly. I was about to say. In retrospect, it kind of is amazing that those two personalities got along the way that they did. Because Bruce Arians can be a little mush in there.
Well, yeah, you know, and it's easy to get along when you come right in and you're immediately an absolute super team, and then you go win it, you know?
Yes.
Although that first season, it's not like it was all flowers and rainbows. I mean, they looked kind of rough.
They're 7-5 at one point.
Yeah, yeah. But it was always going to be short term, you know? And it's like with the Brady Belichick thing. You know, I feel like most people would side with Brady if you want to talk about, like, who was more right, who was more wrong, and that whole thing. You know, I think more people would side with Brady. But at the same time, you know, you can see the other side of that too. In fact, and especially, I mean, to me, I know it's funny to say now because of what all he did, but I get the concern that he, you know, was fading as a player. late in those years and the need to find the next guy. I mean, most quarterbacks don't play in their 40s. No one knew for sure that he was 39 that he was going to be so good, you know, into his 40s or 38, thing,
like,
whatever.
We've never seen anybody really do this before. Like, he was 44 and he just played at an MVP level this past year. We've never seen that happen before in this sport.
Right. Even at the, like, even at that position, I mean, for the most part, you expect, like by the way the timeline has been viewed in this league traditionally, like Tannehill right now is approaching, okay, he's going to start declining, but that's not how people look at it anymore because of Brady, but they probably should still look at it more like that. Although your guy's going to probably blow it up too because he doesn't look like he's slowing down.
I think there could be some news on that front tomorrow too. We'll have to wait and see.
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
You got inside info?
McAfee's teasing a big guest on Tuesday.
Oh,
I don't know.
Boy.
I don't know what else they could be.
Called shot, Michelle.
Could be.
That was my called shot, guys.
We'll see what happens. See what happens.
You're so giddy with excitement.
Yes, when I am.
I am giddy. I'll be.
I was talking about Robbie, but you are too.
Wednesday morning, I'll show up with my Aaron Rodgers Packers jersey. Maybe, you know, he decides he wants to go play for the Washington Commanders. I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see what happens.
God, come I hope back, so.
The Washington Commanders quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. Be some good stuff. When we come back, we'll get into a little college basketball action. Tough weekend for Tennessee. What does it mean for the Vols as they move forward here? We'll get to that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll be joined by Darren McFarland coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour. We'll get his thoughts on the Nashville Predators as they try to end their four-game losing streak coming up tomorrow against the Florida Panthers. Looking forward to that conversation with Darren here in just a few minutes. Right now, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Joe, it was an interesting weekend on the college basketball front. Kentucky takes down Alabama. Florida takes down Auburn in the SEC. An interesting matchup between Tennessee and Arkansas. Quite honestly, it was a pretty brutal watch on Saturday. The first half, I mean, I think at halftime, I think Arkansas was shooting like 29% and Tennessee was around 26 or 27. It was pretty brutal in that game to watch the offensive flow. Lots of offensive fouls, lots of charges called in that game. At the end of the day, Arkansas walks out of there with a 58-48 win against the Vols. What did you think of the game? What do you think it means for the Vols as they move forward here? And the lackluster offense, the lack of flow on offense, concern you at all, given what we've seen for the Vols offensively as of late?
It was very disappointing. And look, take it away from – just move it away from the officiating discussion, which is very frustrating. And I totally agree with anybody who watched that game and said, how could you call all these charges? It's frustrating, but the bottom line is it actually is pretty consistent in college basketball. Sadly, it's pretty consistent. I mean, they've added the flop rule, and still – these officials will every once in a while give a flop warning, and then they'll just keep calling flops and rewarding players who slide under airborne offensive players and fall over and just keep giving them the call over and over again, especially if it's a home player. So, you know, I've seen the Vols benefit from this at TBA too.
Oh, yeah.
So that, but if you take it away from that, I mean, look, in this game, Kenny Chandler, Vescovi, this is the thing. If Vescovi had his normal game, I think they still might win this game. He's 1-for-9 from three. He's 2-for-13 overall. Yeah. He and Josiah James are a combined 1-for-15. Josiah James goes 0-for-6. Throw in Chandler, Kenny Chandler, that's a combined 2-for-20. So if those three guys are going to shoot like that, you can lose to anybody. The thing is, I still like a lot of what the Vols did in this game. I mean, Vescovi just had such a weird game. He has 11 rebounds, you know. I mean, he's still like a really good player. And, you know, Ziegler gives you 12 points off the bench. He came in and did his thing, three steals. But this team is still the concern I have in March is that one day where that's your shooting performance. Does Arkansas deserve credit for it? Absolutely. They're a good defensive team. They took away driving lanes. They did a great job against the two freshman point guards. They're good. They check people. But still, 2 for 20 from three guys that you need to get some shooting from. That's my concern on a given day in March, is they have a game like that. And because the problem is also, like, they just don't have the guy you can throw the ball in the post to when you just need to get to the line or stop a run. And that's where I think the other day was the first time this year since Kamwa got hurt that they really could have used him, and he could have made a difference in that particular game.
I agree. I still think there were some flashes there from Adu, and I think they're going to continue to use him more as they go down the stretch here. I mean, they'll see Arkansas again, by the way. So they'll have Arkansas at home coming up, I think, to close out their SEC portion of the schedule in early March. But now you've got Missouri tomorrow for, you know, trying to get back on track. You take on Auburn on Saturday at 3 o'clock, which is just going to be, I think, an awesome game at Thompson Bowling Arena. Got Georgia and then Arkansas to close out the season. I think Wes Rucker was who I saw put this out on Saturday, and I agree with it. It's shooting performances like the one against Arkansas and at times that we've seen throughout the season that just make this team, it's difficult to pick Tennessee to go on a long tournament run knowing that they can shoot like that, and it's happened far too often this year. Like, it's difficult. And look, if they shoot the way they've shot against Kentucky and, you know, some of the last couple of weeks, Vandy, the way they shot, I mean, I think they've got a chance to make a deep run. But, you know, it's games like this where the offense just kind of falls apart that makes this team, I think, difficult to trust heading into March.
Right. And then you got 5 assists and 15 turnovers, you know. Yeah. I mean, it was just ugly all the way around, and I agree with that. That's where you just – they do a lot of things well. They play good D, and they played good D on that day, I thought. I mean, they hung in because they can play defense. Their defense travels, but, man, you can't have a shooting day like that. Another thing that was lost with this game, you know, because Auburn loses, you know, if Tennessee wins that game, they're playing Auburn Saturday potentially to draw into a tie for first and have a shot at a share of the SEC championship.
Yep.
I know the regular season championships, you know, don't mean a ton, but Tennessee hasn't had a lot of those. So that was up for grabs, and now that's pretty much gone too. But the more important thing is the NCAA released its seedings, you know, an update, which I like that the NCAA does this. So we can take a break from the bracketologist for a minute and say, like, this is what the committee would actually do right now. And Tennessee was a 3 seed. And that's where they want to be. I think if they won this game, you can even start thinking about a 2. But a 3 is great. You get a 3, that means you avoid the 1 seed in your region until, you know, the Elite Eight, if of course they get there. And I know I'm talking about Tennessee in the Elite Eight, you know, which is not a place they go. But still, as a 3 seed, you have a better chance of making a run than as a 4 or 5 for sure.
Big win for Vandy over the weekend against Texas A&M. They're able to get it done. Their 14th win of the year and their 6th win in conference play as well. So, I mean, we've seen some pretty good improvement from Vanderbilt as the season has gone along this year. What stuck out to you about that performance, and how big is Liam Robbins going to be for this team coming down the stretch?
Well, big. And now he has 14 and 8. And of course, the game at Auburn, he had a few moments where you're like, ooh, busting a long 3, going and dunking on the head of a 7-foot future lottery. So you're seeing now why they were excited about Liam Robbins. It does not always work out this way, where a new player is coming in, a transfer, and, you know, people, you know, maybe the transfer is hurt, and it's like, oh, this would be totally different with the transfer. Sometimes that stuff's overrated. I think it's pretty clear now that, I mean, to me, like, if Liam Robbins had been available all year, I think we might be at least talking about Vanderbilt as a pretty solid bubble team. Shoot, if they had just beaten South Carolina both games, which they should have won both of them, they should have won one for sure, you know, they'd be in a different spot. But Liam Robbins is going to make a difference. They are missing Rodney Chapman again. They hope to have him back. And it, you know, this is a team that I think certainly has realistic NIT hopes. I don't think there's any question that this team has made progress now. I mean, that's undeniable from the first 2 years to this year that they've made progress. And now we'll see if they can, you know, they've got a bunch of teams that are kind of bunched with them in the SEC standings, Ole Miss and Mississippi State, you know, Florida just beat Auburn. I mean, Alabama tomorrow night, it's a big game, you know. Alabama's one of those teams, we saw like the best and worst of Alabama against Kentucky the other day. Yeah. they can go on runs and just be overwhelming, and then boy, they can also be not overwhelming. But it's overall, I gotta think that some of the Vanderbilt fan base, you know, if you're out on Stackhouse, I guess you can still be out on him. But I would hope most people would look at this and say, okay, you can see where some of what his vision is can work for this team, and there is progress being made. There's some players, again, player development, Quentin Melora Brown. I a year ago, I'm like, that guy, he's not a D1 player. He's just not. Well, look at him now. That's a guy who's gotten way better in his time at Vanderbilt.
Well, and as you said, Vanderbilt taking on Alabama tomorrow. They got Mississippi State, Florida, and Ole Miss to close out the season as well. Joe, I want to get your thoughts on this, because this happened right as we were going off the air on Friday. We've kind of seen this coming for a while now, but the College Football Playoff Committee making it official that they're going to operate under this contract that expires following the 2025 season, which essentially means there will be no college football playoff expansion until at least after the 2025 season. We've talked about the 12-team format. We talked about, you know, could there be a way where they get that done and maybe it's a 12-team as soon as next year? That's not going to happen. It's going to be a 14 playoff through 2025. Your reaction to how this has happened and what this means for the College Football Playoff Committee as they move forward here?
Well, it just means the fans lose. And this issue that everybody can see now is not going to be addressed because these guys can't get together and figure things out. You know, it's infighting and stabbing each other in the back. And you know what? I think in particular for me, the ACC and the way they've gone about this, I think is ridiculous. But this is what Greg Sankey did coming back on him too, you know? And again, the SEC is going to be fine either way. They are. They're going to be fine, a 4-team, and they're going to be fine expanded. They're going to have more teams than anybody else in the expanded. They're going to be right there to win it every year in the 4-team. So they're okay. But everybody else being mad at them has now created this – unfortunate situation. You can't. This is toothpaste back in the tube, right? I mean, everybody's prepared for this to happen. We're talking about how exactly it should look, and now we have to sit here for another bunch of seasons with a 14 playoff, which, given the state of the game right now, just isn't exciting to me. It's going to be, and I understand the people who argue, well, okay, 12-team playoffs, still going to be the same teams that win it. Yes, but the tournament itself would be better. There'd be some good games in the tournament, and the regular season and winning conference championships would again mean something to people. They've been heavily devalued.
And we'll see if at some point they can get the 12-team proposal figured out. There's been a whole lot of hurt feelings that have taken place throughout this process, and ultimately it does not get done. There will be a 14 college football playoff through 2025. When we come back, we'll be joined by Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donica's Chase. We'll get his thoughts on the Nashville Predators as they try to end a 4-game losing streak coming up tomorrow against the Florida Panthers. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.